talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're coming down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a hard dusty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fog of dusty. If you don't love and leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to play you today the talk I gave. Just last week, gave it in a number of places across Canada. Actually, seven cities seven talks in six different cities, and I'm kind of pleased with this one. This deals with a number of the free speech issues that we're facing these days, and I hope you enjoy these. here we are, and this is the talk I gave last Thursday night in Vancouver. It's the Free Speech Battles, How Inclusion Means You're Excluded, and I deal with a number of topics here, including attacks on Maxime Bernier, Bill Watcock, and so on. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
It's time for the Brian Roux Show. This is the Brian Roux Show group on September 26, 2019. My guest is Paul Fromm, director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression and the Canada First Immigration Reform Committee. He's going to talk about both things going on in Canada right now, current issues. So welcome to our group, Paul.
Thank you, Brian.
Okay, you can sit in the seat of honor.
Or the hot seat. First of all, I want to thank you for coming out tonight. This is going to be a modification of a talk I've been giving across Canada called Jailed for Jokes. And I gave part of that a few weeks ago to you, and that I concentrated mostly on what had happened to Your War News. So, of course, the bottom line there is Your War News is satire, it's humor, and, of course, the cultural Marxists, the Jewish lobby groups, etc., don't like that, and in the end, Dr. Sears may well indeed go to jail for jokes. Somebody who we had through these parts about 2 years ago was the English chanteuse or singer, satirical singer, Alison Chabot. Alison was convicted in spring of last year in England under actually an administrative law, which made it an offense to broadcast material that was egregiously offensive, very offensive material, whatever that is. And that happened to be her satirical songs that you heard her sing about the, in some cases, hard to believe claims about the internment camps in World War II, and probably one that probably stuck in your mind. And, it's so graphic. It is a book written by a supposed survivor named Irene Sisplat. And Irene Sisplat, she actually waited until the 80s to write the book. I guess by that time she figured she'd be on to something good financially. And part of her story was that the family, before they all disappeared, entrusted her with a family fortune in the form of diamonds. And that every night she would swallow the diamonds, and every day, by the next day, she would pick them out of her feces or her doo-doo, and I don't know, wash them off or whatever, and swallow them. That does kind of strain the credulity. Diamonds going through your body would probably slice your innards up to, into spaghetti. But so
as diamonds are forever.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Anyway, Alison has a real way of picking up on these contradictions or just plain nonsense, and they didn't like it. So. In the end, despite a really good fight and a good lawyer, Adrian Davis is one of the best lawyers in Britain, who's defended a lot of movement people, she was convicted, and her sentence was 20 weeks, I guess we'd call it probation, which she suspended sentence. And should she break or other conditions, she can go to jail for up to 20 weeks. And some of the, she had various conditions, including having to pay a fine to the court. And one of the conditions was she could not be on the social media. Now, I don't know whether she, exactly what she was thinking. She felt that the timeline had already passed, but she puts a number of things in the social media, mostly to talk about her case. Because along the way there'd been an appeal, and the appeal was, she lost the appeal. So the group that initially charged her was called the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. And they are fanatical. They are well connected. In fact, their leader, Gideon Felter, said that they have connections with 10 Downing Street, which is the Prime Minister's office. And I have no doubt about that. Especially the previous Prime Minister, Theresa May, was a 110% Israel firster. She has caused more nationalists to go to jail than anybody since the internment of World War II. She is a Zionist fanatic. So I have no doubt that this wasn't boasting. So immediately the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism got on to what we, I guess, would call the probation board, and saying that, she violated her conditions. So Alison was back in court on Monday, and she was found guilty for violating her conditions, so she will go to jail for eight weeks. And has to pay, I think it's £175 court costs. And I thought that's really reminiscent of what had happened under Mao in Red China, that a political dissident would be executed and the family would be sent the bill for the bullet that they put through his head.
Really?
England is a sad, broken, pathetic country. Well, the third person that falls into the category of jail for jokes is Bill Watcott. Now, you've heard Bill Watcott in these parts before.
He's been here, yeah.
Yeah, Bill has moved, actually, to where I am, so it really is the hate capital of Canada. And I want to come back to that, because...
Well, it's close to you, Paul.
Pardon?
Well, it's close to you.
That's right. The hate circle will not be unbroken. Anyway, Bill will face a hate law charge next January. He was, and you have to kind of see how it connects with jail for jokes. In 2015, Bill applied to join the gay pride parade here in Vancouver as a Christian. They turned him down. So then he made up some amazing organization. There was the gay church of the Spaghetti Monster out of Calgary. Now, how anybody would take that, you could look at that, oh, that's going to be a scam. Oh no, the mentally ill people running the gay pride parade. Oh, that sounds okay. At least they're not Christians. And so he dressed up in apparently like a tutu and. He would have made the trust fund kid look as an amateur in terms of get up, and he passed out about 2,000 Christian pamphlets. Actually, I think he passed, they were called something like gay condoms, but they weren't condoms, they were religious tracts. So they were very unhappy that he pulled that off. In fact, the hate squad cops that were looking for him walked right by him. They recognized Walker all dressed up in the drag. So the next year, 2016, we're actually getting to the crux of the story here. He applied to join the Toronto Gay Pride Parade as a Christian. They turned him down. So he then applied as the Green Zombies of something or other, and they accepted the Gay Green Zombies, I think. So he had to get costumes for his six fellow Christians who showed up in body suits in lime green, and they were the Gay Zombies. And once again, he had about 3,500 carefully wrapped up little tracts, which he handed out to passers-by. And he said it really quite something in the very long parade. He was positioned right behind a group of BDSM, I guess, the guys. These people, these fellows had no clothes on except kind of straps. Their bare bones were exposed, and their sandals. And some were on all fours, and they had dog collars on, some were even barking. The gay zombies are behind them, and then behind the gay zombies is Rona Ambrose, who is then the interim leader of the Conservative Party. Hey, she had no problem with a parade like this, but I'm sure she wouldn't march in a European Pride Parade, would she? Oh my God, a white Pride Parade? And it just shows the depravity of our country. We're in Weimar, and you know, those of us with a sense of the past and maybe a feeling of hope, perhaps hope that things maybe work out as they did. Weimar will end. It will end anyway. Things went quite well. Nobody cottoned on to what he'd done until later that night, and I guess some of the the people who'd been given his pamphlets opened them up, and they freaked. Because one side of the pamphlet is basically just Bible quotations explaining that God created two sexes, not three or five or ten. And the other side, based largely on the reports from the Centers for Disease Control, outlined some of the, it's before people suffer, so I don't want to go too deeply into it, but things like anal cancer and anal warts and the various other delightful things. So if the religious aspect doesn't reach you, perhaps the physical dangers might. And he was saying that God loves all people, loves homosexuals, but you must come back to God. So that night he got ferocious emails saying that he should be gang raped and various other charming things. And not very long afterwards, he was served with a $104 million class action suit by an Ottawa homosexual lawyer named Elliot. And the class action included Justin Trudeau, who marched in the parade, Kathleen Wynne, our then lesbian premier, who marched in the parade, the Liberal Party of Canada, whom they leaders had denounced, and several other prominent homosexuals. When that eventually went to court, I would have said that's preposterous. It will never fly in Canada. It might in the States, but not here. Well, the judge agreed that for various technical reasons, he couldn't register the class action suit. However, and this is really worrisome, he agreed with the people who filed the class action suit that the bill would have to give over the names of the six gay zombies, and anybody else who helped him. Like if you put up the money for the airfare to go from Vancouver to Toronto, if you provided him with a bed to sleep in the night before, or bought him a Tim Hortons, you'd have to be named. Because the judge wanted, if possible, because he couldn't actually certify the class action suit, but he wanted the aggrieved people, the people whose feelings had been hurt, including the trust fund kid and Kathleen Wynne and the Liberal Party of Canada, he wanted them to have the chance to pursue in a civil action. And I'm not quite sure what that action would be. All the individuals who'd been involved with the gay zombies. The bill said, I'll go to jail. I will never give up the names of the people.
So now, this reminds me of President Abraham Lincoln's assassination. All the people involved, put them all in trial.
So I'm missing something here.
That's a big deal.
Wynne and Trudeau, they are listed as defendants? Or
no, they're not defendants, they're complainants.
They're ganging up on bill.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, then, that went to appeal. And that appeal was heard very recently, but we don't know the results. And if the appeals court does not overturn the original judge's ruling, Bill will be in contempt of court if he does not give up the names, and he will go to jail. Jailed for jokes, or let's say jailed for a prank. Well, they weren't through with him yet. Last June of 2018, the province of Ontario finally returned to its senses, more or less, and we got rid of the lesbian and her corrupt, rotten government of green freaks and various other freaks, sex freaks, a sex ed program if you made a movie out of it, you would be banned up until a few years ago. So okay. Happy days are here again. She is out. But as you know, there's a bit of a hangover. So okay, she lost the election, but she's still in power for a couple more weeks. Well, one of the final acts of the lesbian and her Muslim Pakistani Attorney General Yasir Naqvi, who also was defeated, yay, was to charge Bill Watkins under Section 319 of the Criminal Code, charged for jokes, or a prank. Now, I have trouble believing that what was in that leaflet could possibly violate Canada's hate law, the willful promotion of hate against a privileged group, in this case, the LGBTQ, whatever. But just because I have trouble conceiving how it is possible with our courts, you never know. So he will go to court. He will go to, on trial. They've set aside a month for this trial, and unlike Dr. Sears, he's being the Crown is proceeding by indictment, which means he could get up to 2 years in jail. Should he lose, my guess is almost certainly he will go to jail. Jailed for jokes. Yep, that's Canada.
Wow.
That's not a very pleasant story on the free speech front. And as you probably know, in most major cities across this dominion, every Saturday, somewhere in the city, there's a protest by the Yellow Vests. And they've been doing this going back to November of last year. It's one of the things that has spooked our cultural Marxist establishment, the very fact that people will keep at it week after week after week. There's something afoot. People are upset and angry. And, I occasionally attend. And let me think, 2 weekends ago, I attended at City Hall, outside City Hall in Toronto, in Hamilton. It's, as they say, on the dating sites, it's complicated. There's been a split among the Yellow Vests. So the more militant faction, the ones who are less politically naive, still gather in front of City Hall. The more, I don't want to characterize them nastily, but naive. Go elsewhere. So, of course, I'm with the more militant faction. They're at City Hall, outside City Hall, and there are an assorted group of people. Some of them are some, like a choir. I don't know if they're kind of lefties from the union movement. They sing songs about love, and we're all brothers and diversity, and all this sort of stuff. And then there's some old-line commies who want to get into it with us. There's one big guy who was screaming at me that I should not put my hands on that flag. I was holding the red ensign. The Canadians fought fascists and Nazis under that flag. And there was a lot of shouting and carrying on and videoing and so on. But what I found interesting about that, and this is what I said in a couple of interviews, is that if my parents, who both fought under that flag in the Second World War, my father in the Royal Canadian Navy, my mother as a nurse in the Canadian Army for 6 years, from 39 right through to 45, if they had known what would happen to Canada, they would never have risked their youth. They would never have given up years of their lives. A country that would be actively suppressing free speech and Christians. This is not what they signed up for. Well, I think as neither of them was actually Anglo, it wasn't really for king and country. It was probably some idealism that they would be building a better world, never really realizing that the better world was not being threatened by the gentleman in Berlin. But they certainly thought of a better country and freedoms preserved, because they'd been told that the fellow in Berlin was going to enslave the world and all that type of thing. And I've actually heard this from old vets years ago. These people are dead now, but that if they'd known that they would end up in a country which was being invaded, where the European people were being replaced, and where you would be in trouble if you opened your mouth, they'd have never thought. Why did we risk our lives? Why did a lot of our buddies never come back for this? And my thoughts on the red ensign. Well, talk about those protests at City Hall. The city of Hamilton has been in an uproar ever since the Yellow Vests started coming out again and again and again. And there's a very leftist, far left union. establishment, you might say, in Hamilton. It's a left-wing city. There are conservative pockets, and they've elected conservatives both provincially and federally on and off over the years. But the tenor of Hamilton, and I'm sure Diane would agree, is left-wing. And the very presence of the Yellow Vests has challenged that. Well, it got even more challenged in June when the LGBTQ crowd had a gathering in Gage Park. Not quite clear what it was. It wasn't a march, but some Christian pastor showed up preaching. Now, this is unusual. The fervor of even of some of the remaining real Christians is quite amazing. After years of torpor, they actually come out and they preach. And these pastors came out and they said, God loves you, but you have got to give up your ways of sin. And you come back to God and you can be, anyway. I'm sure they said more, but you get the drift of it. Well, it wasn't long before Antifa showed up, complete with pink bandanas. Excuse me. And they started to push and shove against the Christian pastors. And then several people from the Yellow Vests and other aligned movements showed up. And they pushed and shoved back. And when the police finally broke things up, a couple of the Antifa had been more or less headbutted, and the police arrested, I think, a half dozen of the Antifa. Well, now they are just in complete rage. The police are fascists. How can this happen? We are a tolerant city. In fact, our mayor has spray-painted a crosswalk for them. It's cost the city $25,000 in the rainbow colors. Oh, yay, we are, what a wonderful progressive city we are. Look what these people are doing. So in late June, the city council directed its staff to come up with measures to ban protests by hate groups and religious fanatics. And at the time, I thought, come on, is this Hamilton or Havana? No matter what you might think, you politicians, you've got to know you can't do that. Can they? I thought, I've got to go to city councils and delegations. In public bodies across this country, city councils, boards of education, library boards, They have a procedure where if you want to come as a citizen with your concerns, you register as a delegation. And that doesn't mean you have a committee. I mean, you can be a delegation of one. And the normal procedure is they give you 5 minutes. So you register in advance, a couple of days in advance, and they put you on the list. And so at the beginning of the meeting, anybody that has something to say gets their 5 minutes. And then usually, at least when I was on the Board of Education, what was done is, if it was something we could actually do something about, we would then instruct staff to do a report on this and we'll take it up at the next meeting. So that's what I want to do. I want to go to City Council and say, the words of Laura Petrie in the old Dick Van Dyke show with that kind of fading voice, Rob, how could you? Well, okay, City Council, how could you? What are you thinking? So for very complicated reasons I don't quite understand, I couldn't do it in July and August. I missed the deadline. So finally, in August, they said they would deal with me on September the 5th. They would deal with my request. So I thought, well, okay, so September the 5th, I will get the word that I will appear at the beginning of the council meeting on September the 18th. Well, a couple days before that, I actually got a phone call from a reporter from the, or columnist from the Hamilton Spectator, Andrew Dreschel. Now, this is very unusual because the Hamilton Spectator makes up the news as it goes along. It never bothers to interview me. So I was actually quite interested. He said, well, you know, your request is very controversial. I said, really? 5 minutes, not like I'm asking to take over the meeting. He said, well, what do you want to say? I half suspect he thought I was going to say, see, oil, or something like that. I said, So I said, well, listen, I want to tell the counselors that they're out to lunch, that the right to petition the king goes back to Magna Carta, that when the barons confronted John on the fields of Runnymede, one of the concessions they got was that you had the right to petition the king, which today would mean a demonstration. So if you feel there's something wrong, you could go to the king and say, you know, I ask that you look at this, Your Majesty, and you would not have your head cut off. In other words, you had a right to present your concerns or grievance to government. And also, with a liberal interpretation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, we had freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, and so freedom of belief. Well, we know you really don't. It's a con job. But at least for public consumption, we can say we have these rights. So I want to say to them, you can't ban protests on public property. And you don't even know what a hate group is. None of the people that you have problems with, the Christian pastors and the yellow vests, has ever been charged under Section 319, let alone convicted. So, you know, it's just a term of abuse. Anyway, that would take up about 5 minutes. So, do we have a copy of, yeah. Beginning on Tuesday, right after Labor Day, which I think was the 3rd, the Pamphleton Spectator came out in a new form. It's maybe a little bit bigger than this, but it's folded like this. Now, I only do this to show what a key position the article was. Andrew Dreschel is a columnist. Now, normally you don't have a columnist on the front page. The inaugural issue of the new format has Andrew Dreschel right across the front page and says something. The headline was something about activist controversy about activists speaking in city council. Well, for once, they didn't call me a white supremacist, so that was a further problem. So, okay, this big article all about the controversy, and I'll say that, well, for almost the only time, the Hamilton Spectator was relatively fair, and the column did present pretty much what I would say to the council. So I thought, well, this is actually pretty good. And they were saying that the council, of course, would be deciding on Thursday whether they would hear me 2 weeks hence. On Wednesday, the Hamilton Spectator, I guess, decided that they had made a big mistake. They ran a big, long editorial telling council not to give me a platform. But, you know, freedom of the press, freedom of expression, they don't believe in it. So not to give me a platform. And then they dredged up the fact that there are precedents for this. I was banned from the precincts of Parliament twice. Well, that's true. I was. But not quite for the same reason. A mere citizen doesn't have the right to address Parliament under any circumstances. But I many times, I rented or booked the Parliamentary Press Gallery. And it's actually a really great service. you generally will accept you. And so you get your half hour. They circulate your press release to the whole Parliamentary Press Gallery. In English and French, telling them that such and such a time you're going to be there giving a press conference on this or that. They have their own cameras, so they film your half-hour press conference. You've got your little video of your event. It's actually very good. I've done it successfully a number of times. I failed twice, and the failure they're referring to is back in, I think, 2008 when I was defending Melissa Gill from charges under the Section 13 of the Human Rights Act, and my sidekick, Alexan Kalbashian, was defending her organization. So there are two of us defenders. And by this time, we had begun to see that the rulings were that truth was no defense. And that wasn't the first time. But I thought, does this country know this? So I said, Alexa, let's go up to Ottawa and have a press conference in the Parliamentary Press Gallery. He said, yeah, that's a good idea. So we're driving up, and just as ever, maybe 100 miles out of Ottawa, get a call from a parliamentary press gallery. Have you heard? What? What have I heard? You won't be able to have your press conference. Why? Have you canceled this? Oh, no. But well, why can't we have it? Well, you won't be allowed into the precincts of Parliament. Why is that? Well, Jason Kenney, our conservative, Jason Kenney had talked to the other House leaders and had gotten unanimous consent to have Alexis Kovashian and me banned from the precincts of Parliament for the rest of the parliamentary session. So if we can't get into the parliamentary press gallery, which is inside the precincts of Parliament, we don't have a press conference. There's a bit more to the story. Apparently, our press notice was circulating around Parliament, and there's a delegation from B'nai B'rith up there that morning. Do I have to say any more?
Yeah.
So B'nai B'rith, you know, danced up and down and told Fat Jason what the word was, and so we got banned. And I thought, yeah, you know, it really shows the utter shallowness. And all the other party House leaders would have said, well, what business is it of ours if some guy had, you know, goes to the parliamentary press gallery to give a press conference? what does it matter, you know? And the fact that the official attachment to freedom is that thin. It was a bit of a wake-up call. Anyway, they cite this as a proof that, you know, you don't have to give this guy a platform. Okay, and this is all over the local radio and the left-wing CBC News local. And my little old 5 minutes has become a major controversy. Okay, everybody's on edge. Thursday, the 5th of September, what's going to happen? City Council meets. Well, I'll tell you, I got whooped. 14-0. 14-0. Not a single person, not even my own counselor, believed in freedom of speech. I laugh at it, but it's pretty effing pathetic, isn't it? Then a woman who's a spokesman for the I hate the stick labels, but like to say the more moderate fashion of the yellow vest, she wanted to talk to City Council too. Well, she did a little bit better than me. They turned her down 13-1. One person thought they ought to give the girl a hearing. These are our city councilors. As I say, you know, this is my tagline now. I only thought I lacked Havana. You know, Havana.
Just hold on. Did you pre-warn them of what you're going to say?
This is a newspaper, right?
I mean, were you on the agenda? Did you have something that you gave them already?
Yeah,
so they knew you were going to
talk. When you register, you have to say what you're doing. You don't have to give them the text.
Yes.
But I told them I want to address the issue of banning groups from banning protests from city property.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, they knew what I was going to say. Okay, the good and the bad. The bad, yes, I got, they didn't hear me. The good, I got far more publicity than if they'd heard me. If they'd heard me, I've been on the other side of the table. So the person has his 5 minutes, and we say thank you very much, and we'll consider this, and goodbye. Who's the next one? There would have been the 14 councillors, the mayor, maybe a few people from the press, a couple of council junkies, and a few members of staff, and that's it. 9:30 on a Thursday morning. As it was, the whole of, at least the literate elements of the city of Ottawa can read more or less what I was going to say.
The city of Hamilton.
What did I say? Ottawa. I don't like Ottawa ever. yes, the city of Hamilton would have read that. So, just shows you how fragile things are, and how terrified they are. You know, what could I possibly do in 5 minutes?
It's what's interesting, Paul. They voted 14-0, right, for you, and then the woman The yellow vest woman, was she white?
Yep.
13. Below the 13th one, only because she was a woman. If she had been a Chinese woman, we have Chinese women at the yellow vests and, you know, other, you know, minority groups, so-called minority groups. You can bet the vote would have been a little different for
yep.
them, too.
Well, we're the lowest of the lowest.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, white male, European white males, proud European white males, we're the pariahs of the pariahs. But yeah, so she got one vote. Now, maybe if she'd been Chinese, she might have got two or three.
Yeah, maybe.
In this case, the ideology would trump the sex of the race. So that's the Hamilton experience. I know many of you were at the Maxime Bernier talk here in Vancouver last night, and I think the cultural Marxist establishment has some real problems. How are they going to deal with this guy? And I think Bernier is actually a bigger threat than they realize. Some preliminary things. So initially, they did not want him to participate in the leadership debate, and he will now. That is going to be extremely crucial. He'll do very well in French, in the French debate. His English, as I think, well, I guess this wasn't on the tape, but I think Brian said his English is good, but he's not a dynamic speaker in English. The onus is really on him in the English language leadership debate. He has got to hijack, and I think he can. I think he's got the flag that the bull just can't resist. If he sticks to immigration, they've got to gang up on him. At that point, he will win.
Yeah.
Because enough Canadians will see, finally, somebody is representing at least some of what we want on immigration.
Like Trump in 2016, right?
Like Trump. And I think Maxime, even if his English is not quite as dynamic as, you know, a native speaker, can do it. And I don't think the other leaders will be able to resist wanting to attack him. And that's good. People will then get to know. So. Yeah, he managed to dodge that vote because initially it looked as though he'd be excluded. A couple weekends ago, some backers of Maxime Bernier put up some $60,000 and they bought billboard space in cities across the country. Here in Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, I understand Saskatoon, Toronto, Quebec City, Halifax, and probably some other places. And the signs, I believe, were very clear, neat. A picture of Maxime Bernier and the slogan,
Say
no to mass immigration. Well, that really hits it. Neat, clean, and then, you know, the contacts for the party. Well, you know, as I say, it's the cape to the bull. And immediately there were feverish protests and online petition and so on. And it's always interesting to see how these things progress. I think the signs went up on Thursday. It took 48 hours for the easily offended to be offended. And by Sunday, the chairman, the president of Patterson Outdoor Signs, which had owned the billboard space, a fellow by the name of Otto, said, Patterson rents billboard space. If you have an issue with what goes on the billboard, take it up with the company or the group that is advertising. Well, that's the right stand. They rent billboard space just like the hotels rent meeting rooms, and they should actually not discriminate or censor meetings. Well, that's the good stand, but that lasted less than 24 hours. By Sunday afternoon, Otto, and I'm embarrassed to think the man is actually probably German, did the typical cowardly Canadian thing and, you know, massively denounced that we have nothing to do with these sentiments and we don't agree. Just yesterday you were saying you rent billboard space, it's up to, you know, people should take up their issues with a bill, with an advertisement to whoever put it up. So anyway, the billboards would be coming down. And you probably saw pictures on Monday of workmen in various places around the country actually stripping the bill. Yeah, and what a symbolic indictment of Canada.
Yeah.
As I say, Cuba North. Cultural Marxism, and it always means repression. It doesn't mean freedom, it means control and repression. But, you know, maybe good comes out of bad. I suspect that the people who put up the $60,000 probably have most of that $60,000 back. I've done this before. You rent the billboard, and that's the space. Probably costs about $2,000, my guess is, for the month. And then you produce the sign. Well, they would be producing, my guess, 20 or 30 of these signs. And that can make the signs cost a lot. So my guess is they're on the cost of the sign. But they will probably get the money for the rental back. And they got far more publicity than they would have with billboards. This is a very big country.
Mm-hmm.
20 with billboards, if that's what it was, is basically nothing. Yes, some people will see them, and some people will talk to others, and there'll be publicity on the social media. But in the end,
doesn't own all the billboards, so I mean, they could go to other,
what is it, Jim Addison company, right?
Yes, and sort of no. Patterson Outdoor Signs has 59% of the billboards in Canada.
Wow.
I'm not saying they couldn't go anywhere else, but not easily.
Yeah.
And believe me, Jimmy Patterson, who did well under the free enterprise system, is no friend of ours. When I ran in Calgary Southeast against Fat Jason in 2011, I wanted to get a billboard. Patterson would not rent me any space because of my immigration message. And believe me, my immigration message was relatively mild. I think they learned one of my tactics from when I ran for mayor in 2010 in Mississauga. I managed to rent space on some of the city buses, so people would see my mug and my slogan, stop traffic, gridlock, tying immigration to traffic gridlock. If you like traffic gridlock, you'll love immigration, vote for Paul Frontman, and my mug. I guess that they were so, the powers that be were so outraged by that bit of daring do that they decided to shut that down. But Jimmy Patterson is does nothing for the freedoms of our people. So it's sad. I mean, he's been a businessman, very successful businessman out here. He came out here flogging used cars, I think, in the 60s.
He did very, very well from the, what I call, people of European descent. If it wasn't for the people here being said, he would have. I know his story a little bit, and he would have been nothing. If it wasn't for our majority at the time, the businesses that he bought and built that we supported.
Yeah, I mean, he's a multi millionaire, maybe even a billionaire.
He's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Christian.
Oh gosh, that's great. he's done very well.
His church needs that, actually.
So, on so many different levels, we see freedom of speech under attack here, but we see people pushing back. And we're looking at some very interesting trials or appeals coming up and cases. And I suspect we'll see more of this before the election's over. I don't imagine I have to convince anybody in this room, but the best hope we have for any advancement on real immigration reform is Maxine Bernier. It's not all I think is necessary to stop the replacement of the European family except for people, but it's a step, and he gets some of the major issues right, unlike Andrew Scheer. Andrew promises to stop the illegals coming over the border. That's good. So does Maxine. But Andrew Scheer, in his immigration statement, or policy, says the baby boomers are retiring and we will need labor to replace them. And you wonder, how bright are you? The baby boomers are my generation, and most of us have retired. Okay. Are there jobs going a-begging? No, we still have about 7% official unemployment, because the jobs that we left are being filled by our children and our grandchildren. There is no labor shortage. Now Scheer has drunk the Kool-Aid. And from there on, it's not very good. So he gets a little bit of it, but very little. In contrast, and I heard Maxine Bernier deliver his immigration program in Mississauga on July 25th, he gets the idea that far from immigration growing the economy, immigration has been draining the economy. And he relies on the material developed by Professor Herb Grubel out here in. And Grubel's first study came out in 2011, and he's updated it. And what Grubel says is that what the immigration cohort that came here from 1985 on contributes to the tax pot every year is now $30 billion a year less than what they take out.
So per Canadian, it's $1,000 per Canadian.
Well, I went through new math, so I'm not sure if your numbers are right, Brian, but I'll take your word.
$850.
So, $30 billion a year. That's more than twice what we pay for our armed forces. Immigration doesn't grow the economy. Immigration drains the economy. Maxine Bernier gets it. And that's vital. Maxime Bernier also, and I don't think the idea is original with him, Kelly Leach came up with something like this when she ran for the Conservative leadership, but he says potential immigrants will have to be questioned in person by somebody from the RCMP or CBSA immigration or whatever. You may not have known this, but it's possible to apply and be accepted as an immigrant online. You don't ever have to be face to face with somebody. And what he wants the face to face interview to do is to establish that you hold Canadian values. Vital, important Canadian values. That's pretty much what Kelly Leach was saying. So if you are here because you believe we're the great Satan, or that we're the cancer of history, or some other thing like that, or you don't believe that women should be treated fairly, or you have any other weird beliefs, you're certainly entitled to those, but you won't be coming here. Great. He also has seen through most of the refugee scam. He's saying that, we should reduce the number of refugees. Most refugees should be by private sponsorship. So the government should not be bringing these people over. If a church group or somebody else wants to sponsor a refugee within reasonable numbers, but they're responsible for them. And he said at that wonderful meeting in Mississauga, we should be taking Christians and Yazidis, the victims of radical Islam. The crowd went crazy. We should be more selective about who we bring here. I haven't summarized all his immigration platform, but Maxime Bernier will give us, the reduction between no more than 100 to 150,000 a year. Well, that's still far too many, but the politics is a game of the possible. That's about the best we're going to get. This is the most coherent program from a political party for immigration reform in 40 years. Maxime Bernier is the man. I was at the rally in Mississauga. And it was very interesting, the dynamics. There were probably about 500 people there. There were some people from the third world. He's got candidates from some third world people in Brampton. And he was introduced by a very interesting person named Salim Mansour. Now Salim is a Muslim who has had a fatwa put out for him. He's a Muslim who dissents from Islamism. And in his introduction he said, we have two choices. Either we have nationalism or we have globalism. And the globalists are in bed with the Islamists. And he pointed out that the Islamists have no loyalty to a country. Of course, the globalists, the same. And you might also say the Zionists. But he didn't say that. I don't want to put words in his mouth. And he said, we have a choice. Will we be ruled from Ottawa? Or will we be ruled by elected people? Or will we be ruled by anonymous people, shadowy people in New York and Geneva and Brussels? That's the choice. Maxime Bernier is a nationalist. Well, the crowd went nuts. Then he had a very interesting personal story. The Conservatives had recruited him, and he was, up until the middle of June, the Conservative Party candidate in London North, in Ontario. And then he got an email telling him he'd been uncandidated. They didn't want him anymore. They didn't give him any reason. He was just out. Well, we know the reason. Andrew Scheer has been making kissy-kissy with some of the Muslim establishment, and they are Islamists. And they don't want this weird dissident. So Salim was out. The next day he got a call from, the first call he said he got was from Maxime Bernier, whom he didn't know, and Maxime said something to the effect, I see the Conservatives don't want you, we'd be very proud to have you run for us in London North, Centre, and he's their candidate. So again, sometimes out of bad comes good. And then he said that Maxime Bernier stands for freedom, but he stands most particularly for the mother of all freedoms, freedom of speech. The crowd went crazy. So, I think on issues that are important to us, Maxime Bernier gets most of it. Immigration, big check mark for Maxime Bernier. I don't ever like to say, well, I'm the only one that saw this, but as far as I know, I'm the only one who's noted this. Have you gone on the People's Party of Canada website and looked at their platform on freedom of speech? That is all we've ever wanted. He will get rid of the hate law. It's gone. He said he will get rid of all federal restrictions on freedom of speech, whether it's a human rights code or criminal code. And the hate law, if he keeps his promise, will be gone. The only section that will remain, and I think whoever advised him didn't quite understand, but the only section that would remain would be advocating violence against one of the privileged groups. But that's already covered under the section of the criminal code. I don't have the right tonight to say, listen, you should all take up baseball bats and go out on the street and beat up the homeless person or something like that. I can't advocate a crime. So if that remains, we've lost nothing at all. He also, Andrew Scheer says that he will enforce, he will defund any university or college that does not protect freedom of speech. So no more of these campus codes or that type of thing. Bernier, and I know that this is true to form. Bernier is by nature a libertarian, economically and I think otherwise, and he is really worth supporting. Another story that has to do with Bernier, I learned today. The fellow named Evan Balgord, He is a one of the principals of a group called the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. Now you have to realize that most of these politically correct names are the opposite of what the group is. It's not anti-hate, it's anti-free speech, or and anti-boy. Anyway, Evan Balgord has a column in today's Hamilton Spectator. And Evan says that Mohawk College, which is the community college in Hamilton, is made a big mistake in allowing Maxine and the People's Party of Canada to host a meeting by Maxime Bernier on the Sunday the 29th. Well, he's going to be interviewed by, and I forget the guy's name, sounds Jewish, he's a kind of an internet talk show phenomenon. Anyway, they're going to have their show at Mohawk College, and of course the Antifa are going to come out and protest, and there's been a lot of controversy, and Mohawk College tried to cancel it, and said, well, it could only go through if they pay 10 times more for security. See, that's one of the scams that the colleges will invoke. Well, the I believe he's Jewish.
You didn't say it was the same last week.
Yeah, the talk show host has said...
Is Steve Carlin?
No.
Jamie Glover?
No. Snyder, maybe. Not quite Snyder. I forget. Anyway, he said, I'll pay for it. So it looks as though the meeting will go ahead. Well, Evan Balgord's got a big opinion column saying it's a big mistake. They shouldn't do this. They shouldn't give Maxime Bernier a platform. I mean, we are really up against heavy-duty enemies of free speech. But the, you know, I think the meeting will go ahead, this time, because the people have enough money that they can overcome that barrier put in their way. That, well, yes, you can have the meeting, but you have to pay all of this extra insurance. And the course should actually be very simple. There have been probably some threats by the Antifa that there could be trouble. Well, if the campus security, whatever that is, doesn't feel that they can handle it, what should they do?
The police.
Oh, my gosh, who would have thought of that? Maybe the Hamilton cops can get out from behind their revenue-making machines, their radar harassment of the motoring public, and actually go and do their job and protect basic rights like freedom of assembly and freedom of speech. And if the thugs and the terrorists who always wear masks want to duke it out with people, then let them duke it out with guys who have nightsticks and pepper spray. I mean, you know, if we were a healthier country, this wouldn't be a problem.
Well, I think it depends on the protocol, because some of us tried to attend the Greek Center, the 7 Molyneux Lower Southern thing, and then the Antifa's basically threatened and bullied the Greek community to shut it down. Kind of at least 10 police that were there like an hour before the meeting. I saw the paddy wagon parked up the hill, and they hired about 5 or 6 security people. Now, as a political candidate, does he automatically get